Fanning, weekend on 2FM.
Noel, how are you doing?
Hey, hi Dave.
Good man yourself. Did you come up from Limerick today, by the way?
I did. I'm up for the night. Yeah.
You're up for the night. Yeah. Okay, very good. That's the voice of Noel Hogan, by the way, because over the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be taking a look at some classic Irish tracks and finding out the story behind the making of them. And what better one to start with here than, I'll tell you what, well, I'll give you a little blast, just a few seconds first before I play the whole thing, obviously later on. Just, I think you'll all kind of know what this one is here. That's enough of that. We'll have the whole thing later on. It is Linger. It is by the Cranberries. It was the song that broke the band in the US. It's from their debut studio album. Everyone else is doing it, so why can't we? And Noel Hogan is here from the Cranberries in the studio now to talk about the early days of Linger, I suppose. So tell me about, I mean, it's one of the band's most famous songs, obviously. Initially, you didn't expect it to be so big, did you?
No. I mean, it was, look, it was always a song that stood out from the others we had at the time because, you know, there was a collection of roughly six songs that we began with. We used to do local gigs with, and we used to play Linger twice because it went down so well. So we knew it kind of stood out a little, but we never thought it would be anything like it went on to become.
And was this the Cranberries Saw Us?
No.
No, it was the Cranberries.
This was the Cranberries.
You know, I'm just thinking, because we got a demo tape from you once and there were six tracks on it, but I think it was the Cranberries Saw Us. Did you send us a demo of the Cranberries?
Yeah, you're right. For the first couple of months with the Doris there, we would have been still under that name.
It's a crap name, by the way. Did you come up with that?
Well, no, thankfully. We had a previous singer. It was his idea. But I have to thank him in another way because we got rid of the sauce and ended up with the Cranberries. So it worked out.
Right, indeed, yeah. So as you say, you didn't necessarily expect it to be so big. Mm. But was it the having to play it twice? Was the realisation that the crowd liked it made you realise?
Oh, yeah, okay. It always went down very well, even though, you know, the crowd wouldn't have known any of the songs. But it just got this really good reaction. So we'd play it nearly as the first song and the last song because we didn't have enough to fill up a full half hour. Yeah. And then I think the next thing we kind of realised is when we sent a demo around that had, say, four songs, that's the one everybody came back talking about. And then you started to realise, okay, there's something there with that song.
Right. Well, by the way, we're talking here to Noel Hogan, 51552. If anybody was ever at a gig of the Cranberry Saws, get in touch. Because I remember in the early days with Dolores, when we did Cork Rocks and that, like it was just, I can't remember if you were, I suppose you were the Cranberries then, I don't know. But Dolores spent all the time with her back to the audience.
Yeah, we were like just...
She was singing to Fergal.
Just bags of nerves is all we were. And Dolores particularly. So I don't think anyone knew what she looked like for the first year.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
It was just pure nerves.
But you know, funny thing, people did know what she looked like after the gig because she was talking 19 to the dozen to anybody. It's just on stage.
Yeah.
Okay, so did you write Linger? And can you remember writing it if you did?
I can remember coming up with the first idea in my bedroom of my parents' house and sitting on the bed. And I knew very little chords. I was still learning how to play guitar. And out of what I knew, I concocted this idea, which is Linger. And we had that quite a while. We didn't have a singer. It was Mike, Ferg and myself. And we had an instrumental version of it. And then eventually we met Dolores. And the first day we met her, it's like, here's a cassette with us. It was like, we used to put a tape recorder in the room, play record and just start playing the songs. And that was on a Sunday. And she came back, I think, the following Thursday with the bones of what would become the finished version of Linger.
Right, and by the way, I did correct myself earlier on, which I shouldn't have, because I was right first time. Everybody else is doing it, so why can't we? And just as a matter of interest, in terms of Cranberry stuff now, Why Can't We? That's a book you have out at the moment of the full story through Hot Press of the Cranberries, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the Hot Press, but I think it's out in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, it's not out yet?
No.
Right,
no.
Okay, fair enough. Perfect for Christmas.
Stocking filler.
Did I mention the word Christmas already? So you do remember writing the thing and you do remember what happened on the Sunday to the Thursday. Do you remember the first time you actually then gave the song to Dolores and did she say, yeah, I like this? Or what did she do with it?
Yeah, I mean, we played a few songs for her, instrumental versions on a day, and she was like, oh, I really like that one. And it just by coincidence, that's the one we had on a cassette and gave it to her. And no idea what she was going to come back with, whether it would work or not. Like, I literally met her an hour beforehand and she came back. I have an idea for it, started playing, and it was quite hard with the equipment we had to hear the lyrics properly, but you could hear the melody. And straight away it was like, there's something definitely here. There's, you know, something kind of starting to come together. And she used to carry around a small little Casio keyboard, and she started playing that kind of that string line that's in there. And it wasn't really until we went in and did the demo where we could actually hear the lyrics.
When you say went in where?
Zurich Studios in Limerick at the time. And that was kind of the only show in town really for recording.
Yeah.
And we scraped the money together to go in and do the EP, or sorry, the demo. And then we finally could hear the Doors properly. We could hear the lyrics, hear the melody. You know, we kind of had an idea of that. But those high vocals that she does behind, she started layering those. And that was the first time we'd heard. We didn't know she could go that high. And it was really one of those, you know, the hairs on the back of your neck kind of standing up, because I hadn't heard anything like that on a kind of a, what we thought was an indie kind of guitar band thing.
Because the text just come in there now and it says, man, the Cranberries, brilliant tunes. So with brilliant tunes, what do you think it was that made this one different or stand out from the other tracks? I mean, you had a kind of a, you know, you gave it to an audience, you gave your songs, and this is the one that seemed to go down well. But what do you think it was that made it different? Because as you say, at first you didn't know.
No, to be honest, the other songs were terrible. You know, you know, those songs went as time went on.
Right, yeah.
It was kind of, it definitely stood out way more then. But then in time, we started to write songs like Dreams and Sunday, a lot of the songs that were on the first album. And I guess for us, each time you write a new song, that's your favourite song then for that week. And then you move on, you write the next one. So Linger was always there, but it definitely for us, it probably lost its kind of sparkle that it had one time as time went on. But it just always seemed to have this reaction. And when we went to record it with Stephen Street, he wanted to leave it to the end. He kind of felt that it needed special attention. And when you start seeing all these things, and it was him and Denny Cordell who had signed us, he didn't want Stephen to work in it for a while. You knew that they had plans for it, that it was going to be a bit different from the rest of them.
And you also mentioned Dolores' voice and didn't know she could go that high. But was there any other stuff about it? Like, how much did it change from the song that you had on a cassette to when you went into the studio and recorded? Like, if I play it now, which I will, like, how different is that completely and absolutely 100%? And is a lot of that Stephen Street, the producer?
Yeah, like, definitely all the kind of, he made it sound like a proper band. There was a lot of the elements were there. String parts, even though they were on a keyboard.
Yeah.
The kind of guitar break, the slide guitar, that wasn't there. That was Stephen's idea. And it was probably longer than it is, even though it's quite a long song anyway. We had this bad habit of making things roll on and roll on. But he kind of glued it all together, even like the rhythm section with Mike and Ferg and the kick drum and the bass. He had always this constant battle with whether we should push on it or whether it should pull back a bit. Little things that, you know, a lot of people probably wouldn't notice, but it meant we had to redo it like 100 times to get it right.
Yeah, funny thing is, like, you spent a lot of time in the first part of the 1990s, the first half in America. A lot of people here didn't realise just how huge you absolutely were in America. We're talking 40, 50 million album sales as well. So, you know, was this the song that really broke America for you?
Yeah, I still, like, I have my whole career to thank for this song, you know, because it, you know, everyone knows the story. The album came out here and the singles came out, and they kind of, they didn't really do much between Ireland or the UK. But all the while, in college radio in the UK, in the US, they picked up on it. And by the time we got there, Linger was already number 8 in the Billboard charts, and we had never put our foot, you know, on any stage over there. So the first night we went out and we played, it was like the place went crazy, and particularly for Linger, because it, at that point, had crossed over from college radio to mainstream.
And you had no idea how big it was. You were touring here with the Flowers, were you?
We were in Europe. I think we were in Germany or Spain. It's one of those we were in when we got the call to come over.
And you went off the Hot House Flowers tour?
We did. We had a few dates left, but we were signed to Ireland at the time, and they said you have to come over. I think they were probably even surprised it had done so well. And that was it. We left the next day and everything changed from that point on.
And the album, this was a track from an album. It wasn't just a single at the time. The album was out. Everybody else is doing it. So
the album was out, because how I would remember that is when we went out for that first gig, they not only knew Linger, but they knew the words to all the songs we played.
Yeah. Okay, so did you ever tire of playing it? Or did you ever not include it in a set?
Yeah, one time. And
that sounds like a big mistake to me.
Yeah, and I remember it like it was yesterday because it just, yeah, it was a big mistake. Look, we've all been there where you go to see a band and they decide we're going to play all these abstract songs B-sides.
I hope you like our new album. Yeah, that's all we're doing tonight.
Exactly. So it was, and it was a bit out of boredom. Like it was, you think back, it's the first song we had and we had to play it every gig ever since. So then you go, oh, we're not going to play it tonight. And it did not go down well. So it was just, you know, people spoke about it for so long afterwards. We, bar that one gig, we played it in every show we ever played.
Can you remember where the gig was?
It was Europe. It was somewhere in Europe. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, your relationship to the song now. I mean, what is it? I mean, like obviously you say, like you know, we were talking to Don McLean earlier on the program, and he says, you know, what does American Pie mean? And so it means I'll never have to work again.
Yeah.
Like, has this paid the mortgage?
Yeah, I suppose it has. But I mean, it's lovely to hear it, and I mean, the fact that I was I think I was about 18. When I wrote this, and the fact that whatever it is, 30 something years later, it still gets played all the time, and people know, even with the intro on it, whether we play it live or on the radio, you know in the first couple of bars what that song is, and it's a nice feeling that, you know, what you did as a kid still kind of resonates today.
And does the passing of Dolores change the listening to it now?
Yeah, it does with a lot of the songs. It reminds me a lot, I guess, when I hear it on the radio about that time, those first few months in particular, when we first met Dolores and coming up with these ideas and those early tours where, you know, you're playing in a bar to five people and all that kind of stuff. Mm. So it's really nice memories. So it does change the meaning of a lot of the songs are like that.
Right, well, hold on a minute. I'm going to play it fully now and then I just want to ask you a few questions about what you're up to. So let me try and find it. Here it is. Okay, this time I'll play it in its entirety. The song he's talking about, Noel Hogan, The Cranberries, Linger. There it is, Linger. That's The Cranberries. Noel Hogan is here. And someone says, hi, Dave, and hi to Noel. I was a regular attendee at the Cranberries Saw Us gigs in Limerick. Even though Dolores was so sweet and so shy, she lived and breathed music. It was evident from those early years that she had something special. Loved and missed hugely by all Limerick fans. Continued success, Noel and the lads. And that comes in from Cora. Another one says, I was in the UCC bar when Cranberries got signed. There you go. Right, fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, that was playing. You told me even more about the thing in terms of like getting the chords together. Was it just yourself sitting on your parents' bed or sitting in your whatever
my bedroom in my parents' house? Yeah,
right.
I mean, kind of. Some of those chords are made up because I didn't know the proper way to play them. So I mean, for years, didn't even know what it was. You know, because you're learning, and a lot of the early Cranberry songs were like that. Because Mike Ferg and myself kind of started playing at the same time. So we were winging it a lot. And one of the reasons we wrote our own songs is because we weren't good enough to play covers.
Yeah.
So it was like, let's just make up songs. And it's a good way to learn.
Like, did you have, okay, there was no internet or anything like how to play the guitar. Would you have the Bert Whedon 10 first steps on how to play a guitar?
No, it was like, here's a guitar. Now go in, figure it out kind of thing.
And it really is just figuring it out, is it?
It was, yeah. I mean, we were lucky on all sides. The parents, like between the four of us, were great. They just kind of let us to it and let us use rooms and houses and, you know, garages and things like that. Like I've often thought how Dolores' mother must have thought when she came home and said, I'm going on tour with three guys I met a few months ago and we're off to the UK.
Yeah.
You know, I put myself in that position now. If my daughter came in and you'd be like, what? Yeah. Really? Yeah. So, I mean, we were given a lot of space by all our parents.
Yeah. And it was also a time when you could build up as well. I mean, like, the first album did very well, but it's like you could always be assured that you were going to get to album two and three and four, which doesn't necessarily happen these days.
No. And I mean, we've said it before, we did think when the album kind of flopped here initially that that might be the end of it. Because when we did that Hatter's Flowers tour, we approached that more as a holiday then, because we thought we'll get the call any day now. Mm. And then, but once you have that success, you are given a lot more room to kind of, you know, develop then and kind of build a sound and hopefully get better at what you do.
And, you know, I know that it got a bit too much sometimes, and towards the end of the 90s, that you really needed a lot of time off. Did it really become very grueling? And did you feel you maybe took on a bit too many gigs, a few too many gigs?
Definitely, yeah. Mm. From, I think, the third album onwards, I think. Now, we did learn then afterwards, in hindsight, you look back. And but initially, that third album was kind of, it was a disaster from the beginning, because nobody was really in the mood to do it, and we'd been at it for 6 or 7 years straight at that point. And then there was a 2 or 3 year tour planned that nobody wanted to do. And it just, you start to feel that it isn't your band anymore, that it's more, it's managers and record companies that are in control, and you're just kind of showing up and doing what they want you to do.
Do you wake up one day and say, hold on, you actually can say no?
Mm. Yeah. And thankfully, it was, in fairness, it was Dolores that rang me one night and said, I can't do this, I just need time off. And you finally, well, I certainly thought, great, someone said it. Because I'm thinking the same thing, I just don't have the guts to say it. And that was it, and that was when we kind of took back control of it.
Do you know, the song like Linger, and like and this huge success in the States, and that it opened every door and sold your 50 million albums or whatever, was MTV, did it play a big part?
Oh, massively. I mean, without it, we had that college radio success, but MTV picked up on the back of that, and that definitely drove it into the mainstream. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's massive help to us.
Now, what about other parts of the world? I mean, like, did you enjoy going to Japan and all? Did you go to Australia, all these things?
Yeah, especially the first time you go to any of these countries. Like, there is a kind of case where you go round and round and you kind of know what to expect. But the first time, when we grew up as kids, watching it on TV, you think, wow, aren't those places amazing? And suddenly you're there, you know, and you're spending weeks in places like that.
Mm. Like the classic thing of touring, did you stay in the hotel rooms most of the time in between gigs, or were you able to go out and see things?
As time went on, you stayed in the hotel more. Yeah. When we were kind of younger and kind of had more kind of stamina, you go out a bit more, right?
You know, funny thing about all that, would you do it differently if you could go back?
You think you would sometimes, but then, you know, we kind of did all right, I guess, with it. So maybe you just leave it be.
And you have to grab it while it's there, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's the great thing about, I mean, you start a band and you hope this will happen. And when you're in the middle of it, you don't even notice, but you do have to, it is a phenomenal amount of work and people don't realise that. Yeah. You know, it looks great from the outside, but it's grueling enough.
Ah, but it was great though, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely great. So what are you doing now, Noel, these days? You had the single.
Had the single with Brona. I did the soundtrack during lockdown, and there's two other kind of long-term projects that are coming to an end now that should be released early next year. So,
Music that you've made.
Oh, new music, yeah.
And when
you
say soundtrack, what soundtrack?
I did, it was for a documentary, HBO are doing this kind of series of documentaries about music, and the one I did was about Woodstock 99 and how it was an absolute disaster.
Yeah, the corporate one.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So I worked on that for about 8 or 9 months up until kind of June. So most of the lockdown was spent doing that, thankfully, because it gave me something to do.
All right, well, listen, thanks so much for dropping in today, Noel.
Thanks,
good
Dave.
On yourself, Noel Hogan it is. Tomorrow on the show, by the way, I'm going to be talking to renowned Irish costume designer Emer Nivel Downig. She's worked on everything from The Wind That Shakes the Barley to Becoming Jane to Brideshead Revisited, and she's going to be telling me about dressing A-list Hollywood actress from Julia Roberts to Colin Farrell, amongst other things on the programme tomorrow. So listen, Noel, thanks a million. Good
thanks,
on
Dave.
Yourself.
Cheers.
Take it easy.
Dave Fanning on 2FM. 2FM.